Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am back. It's your girl, Jacqueline, alongside my co-host, Mr. Mark Ellis. I missed you, sir.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. You went to France. You went to Texas. You went all over the globe.
And Rome.
Jet setting. And Rome. So you're covering movies. You're at festivals. You did all the things. And now you're back here.
Back here. And honestly, it's good because I felt like my absence, it was feeling a bit devious. A bit insidious.
You felt guilty. Wow.
I just felt
and you set
so
up our movie.
Wrong to not be here. But since we are back, we are going to be talking horror. That's right. We're going to be talking about Insidious Chapter 2. And alongside us today, we have a great host. He is a video creator on TikTok. He's also the host of House of Cinema podcast, lover of movies, literatures, and a very controversial talk to a topic we'll get to later. Cinema Joe, sir, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here. Is it controversial? I cannot believe this is controversial. But
so,
I can't wait to hear more about this opinion because we kind of dusted it before we went to air.
Yeah.
And I know a little bit of the backstory, but Jacqueline, you were in deep in the trenches when this this movie that has caused some of this controversy had come out.
So this is what it is. So Rotten Tomatoes, people, they have, as y'all know, listening and watching, y'all have feelings, y'all have opinions, and you get up in your feelings about it. And one of the things was the highest ranked movie on Rotten Tomatoes. We have a list.
On the tomato meter.
On the tomato meter. And for the longest time, it was Citizen Kane. And then our archives, Tim Ryan, who we'll talk to later, his team, so blame him, went and discovered a contemporary review of Citizen Kane that trashed it because people don't remember Citizen Kane was actually not very well received. It was too avant-garde for its time.
Didn't win the Oscar.
Didn't
that
win
was
the Oscar.
How green was my valley?
Thank you, Mr. Smodown. Just saying that you forget things. But
that's what I remembered.
So when it went off, Paddington 2 became the highest ranked movie. And like that was like a whole nother thing because the Paddington 2 people were so excited until lo and behold, we found another review and then Paddington 2 got dethroned. And then the Paddington 2 people started flooding my inbox and DMs with, "What did you do?" And so
when you a show.
Yeah.
Is...
You saying, "Are you one of these people?"
No. I was not in the DMs.
Okay.
Was I spearheading the movement to kind of bring back Paddington to the forefront, to number one spot above Citizen Kane? I may have been there.
Oh
on
my
the front
God,
lines.
We have a saboteur in our midst, ladies
so
and gentlemen.
So you're pro-Paddington 2.
Pro-Paddington 2. I wouldn't say I'm anti-Citizen Kane.
You hate Citizen Kane, why?
But, I mean...
Orson Welles is just rolling over in his grave
Paul
right
King
now.
Paul King could maybe do Citizen Kane, but could Orson Welles do Paddington 2 is the real question.
I think the real thing we need to ask ourselves is, in maybe 30 years from now, can we see Paddington do ads for Ripple Wine?
Maybe. Absolutely. Honestly, I was thinking about the guy that voices Paddington 2 when you were saying that, and I was just picturing him because I always forget what he looks like. And then I was like, wait a minute, who voices him? And then I thought of his face. He's the guy. He's such a – he plays creeps on TV, but he has, like, the most angelic voice.
Isn't that Ben Whishaw?
Ben Whishaw, yeah.
Q from 007.
Yeah, and he also is in This May Hurt, where he plays, like, a really, like, angry nurse. And so I was literally – I'm like, that's Paddington.
It's a great gig. The bear is adorable. I love Paddington 2, but, you know, Citizen Kane's up there too.
Which one would you pick?
I would go Citizen Kane for the history of it. Because
I enjoyed my time here, but
oh my God.
I feel like Paddington 2 at least was able to like springboard off of the first Paddington, whereas Citizen Kane just had to like conjure itself out of nothing. A lot like Insidious 2 got to rely on the lore of the first Insidious, which was a monster hit, as was the second one. I think the second one, on a budget of maybe, what, $5-6 million, made like over $150 million at the box office. But it's still just that first Insidious movie that is fresh. And it's fresh, so I'm not going to knock it, but it's 66% fresh. So you're in Freshville, but you're not exactly in the nicest part of town.
Yeah, let's take a trip back, because Insidious Chapter 2 was 2013. So this was like the heyday of what we would now call the found footage era of horror. This is a very different time. So let's take a trip back. It's Insidious Chapter 2. It's 38% rotten with a 57% rotten audience score. So even the audience is kind of mixed on this one. We're talking about it because Insidious Red Door, this is now the fifth installment, will be out July 7th. Ooh. And this is a direct sequel to this installment. So for folks that maybe haven't seen it, we have a ton of editorial on there, including all of the Blumhouse Horror Ranked, if you want to check that out. I'll just ask you, Joe, like, what's your just real quick history with the Insidious franchise? How deep were you into it? Was this like your fave?
I was a huge Insidious fan when it came out. I saw it in theaters. I was with a bunch of friends. It was a big deal. I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere, it felt like. I mean, this one was earlier in Wan's career, so we knew who James Wan kind of was, you know, via Saw. Mm. But I went in pretty blind, and I thought it was tremendously horrifying. Great. I had a good time watching it. So then Insidious Chapter 2 comes out, was all in. All my chips are in on this at this point. We'll get into more about our feelings on Insidious 2, but as the franchise progressed, it has gone in an interesting direction, considering this is kind of like weirdly parallels the Conjuring movies, which are also coming out this around the same time. Mm-hmm. But Insidious kind of falls, I don't want to say falls on the wayside, but it starts to live in the shadow of the Conjuring series. But I've always been a big Insidious fan. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Well, we'll get to that one. Before that, though, I want Mark to do the great awesomeness, because you're really going to have to give a synopsis of Insidious 1 and 2 to give it a synopsis. But if you can, please, sir, let us know what happens in Insidious Chapter 2.
All right. So some spoilers, especially for the first Insidious, because the end of the first Insidious leaves off where, oh, thank God we got out of that one. All right. Everybody's okay. Let's have a nice evening. And we solved the thing. Oh, but we didn't, though, because Patrick Wilson, at the end, you see a photograph and it looks like he's the one that actually strangled Lynn Shay's character Elise at the end of the first movie. So now we open the second movie and we're investigating who strangled her. We know that it was somebody taking over Patrick Wilson's body. We don't really know what was happening. It turns out that the fingerprints on her neck are not Patrick Wilson's. More on that later. And so we're cleared, but there's a lot of strange crap going on in the houses that we inhabit. And it doesn't necessarily be the houses that are haunted so much as the people that are inhabiting them, having some demons that they have to reconcile. And so now Patrick Wilson is sort of fighting for his life as the rest of the family's thinking, do we leave this guy? Do we just pack up the stuff and go? And it's not that easy, because one of the kids is starting to now talk to the other side that we refer to as the Further in this film series. And so we basically have to go on a mission into the Further. We meet some old friends there and we come back out on the other side. But are we better for the experience, or do we just infect more people with this thing that now you know there's an afterlife and you know there's a lot of other crazy stuff going on, all predicated on this one like really murderous entity that appears to be a woman who looks like the woman who comes into my room occasionally at night because I have that sleep. What's the sleep paralysis?
Oh,
I'm telling you, it's the same lady. She comes in. She's past middle age, but I wouldn't call her elderly because I don't want to offend her, because, again, she's in my room half the time. She walks in like a black dress and she just lays on top of me. Just puts a lot of pressure on my chest. This hadn't happened in a minute, but it used to happen a lot. And around the time Insidious came out. I think I found the connection now that I think about it.
Oh,
I think maybe
God.
I saw these movies way too many times. But yeah, she like puts pressure on you. And people who have sleep paralysis will say, like, no, it's the same It's the same person coming in, and she's like evil Santa Claus. So she comes in, she puts a lot of pressure on you, and it's that like weird, like you're in between sleep and awake, and you want to fight it. It's like when you're up at bat and the pitch is coming and you want to swing at the fastball, but you just can't for some reason. That's how it feels. So it takes like a good 30 seconds to like get her the hell out of your room. Then you wake up and you're fine. But yeah, anyway, that's the person in Insidious.
Wow.
That was,
so
that's a way to describe the movie.
Yeah. A really personal journey I took on this one. I haven't seen her in a minute. I think my herbal medication.
Real?
But, yeah.
Like you really see a person.
Sleep paralysis. She walks into the room. She just kind of floats in, lays on top of you. Very pushy broad we're talking here.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because like I literally thought that you were actually saying that you felt a presence. I was like, do we need to go into your ghost
hunting?
I think
he is saying that.
It's not a ghost.
No, it's not a ghost. It's just the feeling of sleep paralysis. Oh, okay. See, he thought
I thought
too.
You were saying an actual person.
I thought you were
person.
Talking about an actual.
It feels like it.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
And the first time it happened, I thought it was a ghost.
Okay.
Like you were telling that so convincingly, I'm like, oh, wow.
If I'm sleeping on my back all night, it might happen again. So I'm a side sleeper.
Okay, well, that makes good sense.
I also have a guard dog now.
Yeah.
Molly takes care of her.
Oh my God. Honestly, I literally was like, wow, Mark, your house is haunted. You should move.
Well, according to Insidious rules, moving doesn't help.
No.
This is true.
You
we're
are
gonna
haunted.
Get in we're gonna get into that. Why don't we
Joe delivered that line exactly like Specs and who's the other guy
yes.
in Insidious?
Tucker. Oh my God.
Specs and Tucker.
They're so good.
Don't do that to him because they're my biggest beef with this. But let's start with
really?
You.
Wow.
Okay, we'll talk about it. We'll talk.
Joe, sir, yes. Let's go ahead and talk about this one. Is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong about Insidious, especially on the tomato meter with 38%?
38% on the critic side. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong or right? In the long run, I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes is right.
Oh, okay.
Now,
wow.
Not by, you know, like 38%. Maybe you push it to 45%. But I don't
That's
think this
quibbles.
Is entering fresh territory for me. I think this is a pretty big step down from the first Insidious,
yeah.
If I'm being completely honest. Especially because Insidious, you know, really introduces a lot of interesting concepts, villains. I mean, we kind of talked about this before the podcast started recording.
Hold up. We're going to get into that movie talk. But you're saying it's right-ish.
I think it's right-ish. I think it's okay. Right-ish, yes.
Man, am I going to be this girl today? What are you going with?
Well, I sort of agree with Joe in that I was expecting a certain other entities / characters to pop out that never sort of did. And so I was left feeling a little flat. But I counter that with I like the way that they expanded some of the mythology in this world. And so it's not as good as the first Insidious. I didn't think the scares were as potent in this one. But I would get it just on the border, maybe on the other side of Freshville. So whereas the first Insidious is like just limping into fresh territory, I think this one, I would put it around, I think Rotten Tomatoes was wrong, but I would put it 55, 56, 57%.
I don't think I would get it that. I do think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. You know what's really weird? Whatever the score is, again, it gets in that 43 range, which gets me on my movie that I have a hard time with. But the one thing I will say about this, I know Insidious is a better movie than 38%. I think I would have to honestly see it in a different light than I saw it this time for me to say where that is. Because I'm also looking at this from like 2023 eyes, where like things don't look as clean as they did in 2013. Like some of the props and some of the other stuff, it doesn't. I know I liked that a lot better back then than I do now.
Are you comparing this to all the fancy pants movies you saw at Cannes?
No, I'm comparing it to like Malignant. I'm comparing it to, you know, some of these more recent horror movies that were on streaming services that look better than this one. And this was a theatrical. So that's not fair to the movie, but it's like, I don't know where the number is now. Anyway, that's where I'm saying, I will say Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, but I can't like give you a number. If I had to, I would say 42.
It's no Paddington 2. We can all agree that.
It's definitely no Paddington 2.
Few things are in life,
yeah.
But let's be honest.
I could get it up to a 40, maybe even a 50, but not 55. So anyway, let's go ahead right now and see what the critics were saying back then. Let's listen to my favorite segment, 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
Director James Wan and writer Lee Whannell cut their teeth, not literally, on the Saw films. So their 2010 movie Insidious was something of an about-face, a haunted house story that was moody and atmospheric rather than ultra-gory. But while the original won a decent measure of critical plaudits, Chapter 2 was largely felt to be a rehash, and one that looked especially mediocre coming on the heels of the certified fresh The Conjuring, which was also directed by James Wan and scripted by Lee Whannell and was released just 2 months before. Insidious Chapter 2 is rotten at 38% on the tomato meter with 130 reviews, and it has a 57% audience score. And just for comparison, Insidious from 2010 is fresh at 66%. Insidious Chapter 3 from 2015 is rotten at 57%, and Insidious The Last Key from 2018 is rotten at 33%. And if you can't get enough James Wan, Lee Whannell talk, we covered Saw on a previous podcast. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Jeanette Katsoulis of the New York Times wrote, "A mess from start to finish, though judging by the ending, this story won't be over anytime soon. Insidious Chapter 2 is the kind of lazy, half-hearted product that gives scary movies a bad name." However, in a fresh review, Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune wrote, "Wan is getting better and better at figuring out what to do with the camera and maneuvering actors within a shot for maximum suspense while letting his design collaborators do the rest." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Insidious Chapter 2 is decidedly short on the tension and surprises that made its predecessor so chilling." So that's Insidious Chapter 2. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. In their line of work, things tend to happen when it gets dark. Back to you, folks.
His taglines are getting so good.
He's
like,
so
I
good.
Love them. Like, it's just like, give the cut the check. Give the trailer. That right there is Tim. It's amazing. All right. Let's go ahead and break down a little bit more with Insidious Chapter 2 in our movie talk section. I want to start here because it's so interesting. We talk about Lee Whannell and James Wan, but also now Blumhouse, because for folks that don't know, they've sort of like partnered together. They're going to be doing this huge new venture. And this was really like the early days of like Blumhouse. This is not too far after Paranormal Activity, but this is before we get to something like Get Out, which you could say was like the maturation of that studio. Joe, what is sort of your feelings about Blumhouse and particularly what Jason Blum's been able to sort of do with horror over the past 10 years, 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, you could arguably say that they've revolutionized horrors, maybe a very dramatic term, but they've really introduced a lot of new horror to the mainstream culture. With, you know, Paranormal Activity was a big turning point, taking a movie with a micro budget and then for Blum to take a chance on it and then tell people, let's watch this movie and put it out for the world, becomes a huge hit, a franchise within its own. And now they've kind of evolved so much. They, you know, won an Academy Award with Get Out, and now they're just producing, you know, they did the Halloweens. Mm-hmm. They're doing so much now. You know, Blumhouse, the reinvigoration of horror the last 10 years, you could put say Blumhouse is a large part of that. And I think that it's exciting for horror fans for the next, you know, for the future with Wan and Whannell. Blum has done a lot, and I think, you know, horror fans are really grateful for that.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Do you have a favorite, like, deep cut Blumhouse movie? Because they do more than just horror. That's what I love when they, like, come and pull something out of, like, out of whack. I love those.
Yeah, and I just love the model that they have where it's like, we're going to make quality cinema on a budget and we're going to put it out and people get excited to see these movies in a movie theater. Like, I love when something comes out and it feels like an event and you want to see this kind of stuff opening night, even if it's not the best movie, which Insidious Chapter 2 isn't, or the best franchise, which I think Insidious is in terms of horror, but you just... you love that feeling of being in a packed theater on opening weekend and seeing that stuff where you get scared and then you laugh at how scared everybody got and then you get scared again because that was just a cat. Well, it wasn't the real scare. There's something else behind the door. But in terms of like I think the benchmark for these, and I'll go back to one of the producers of this movie, Oren Peli, who kind of like just brought Paranormal Activity. You talk about making a movie on a shoestring budget. I still love PA3 the most because the oscillating fan trick. It's just so well done. But then you also take Insidious, and separating the lore from The Conjuring is something that we may not have to do much longer because there's rumors that maybe there can be some sort of crossover or maybe a crossover with Insidious and Sinister. I'm not sure how you want to take it, but the Patrick Wilson effect in all these movies. And it's even tougher to separate the beginning of this movie because the first name you hear, I think, is Lorraine. And you're like, wait, is this Lorraine Warren or is this somebody else? Patrick Wilson's here, but it's a very different Patrick Wilson in these movies than you would get in The Conjuring. Conjuring came out in 2013, I want to say.
Yeah.
And so Insidious predates
it. Really gets that going is when they start doing The Conjuring. That's when James Wan becomes James Wan.
Yeah. And it's just, it's new, fresh, fun franchises where you're not trying to reinvent again Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th or even Halloween, these classic ones from all our collective youth. It's new stuff. And maybe it's starting to feel a little repetitive now because we've had so many Conjuring movies and we have a new Insidious movie coming out on July 7th. But I still like that they can play with the lore in ways that I don't think those sort of father figure franchises can anymore.
I mean, I think anytime you're getting into your fifth and sixth chapter, you're going to have a hard time making folks feel like this is going to be new. I mean, this is what, 20 movies deep in the sort of lore of all three, including Sinister. I don't even know where you put stuff like The Nun, but it's also part of that sort
of Conjuring verse.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I forgot there were three Annabelle movies.
You know, I mean, like you're getting pretty deep. I always like reminding folks about this one. Jason Blum and Blumhouse also produced Whiplash.
Yeah, that's
the Damien Chazelle movie. I just like that one as like a deep cut. I was not about it. This was back when I didn't watch horror movies.
You weren't always a horror movie guy.
No, I was not. And it wasn't against horror movies. I enjoyed horror movies. I had too much trauma and fear to watch them without worried about like sleeplessness. And this movie, I will say, had a little bit of that. Because then I had to go back and watch like Insidious Chapter 1. And like just some of the scares in these are just like they're not fun. Like I have a piano in my house. Oh, I have a grand piano in my house. So this was maybe not the movie for me to watch at 9 o'clock at night. Actually, let me set the scene for me watching this movie last night. It was great. So I was 500 pages deep on this like incredible mafia romance novel. I mean, this guy was amazing.
Romance novels have moved on to from the sports locker room into the sort of world of crime.
Oh my God, it was so great. It was just so explicitly awful. It was amazing. 365 days doesn't have anything on this book. And so then I was like, oh, it's like 9 o'clock and it's dark. I need to go watch the Insidious movie for tomorrow because I know I've forgotten it. And that was just too big of a switch. Like, that was just, like, too big of a switch to go from, like, mafia romance to, like, let me scare you with the ghost people and, like, creepy Patrick Wilson. I was so freaked out. I was, like, not about it. It, like, creeped me out extra.
It's a violent turn.
Yeah.
I do say that I think that when you're watching, when you're talking, like, to one of your friends and they get scared watching a movie, it makes it more entertaining for you. So, like, what you went through actually makes Joe and I probably appreciate the movie more.
Oh, my God.
Because we know that it affected you that way. I grew up in a house that had a piano and a grandfather clock that would go off at like random times.
Yeah.
And again, this is all in the landscape of Williamsburg, Virginia.
Fair.
Haunted since the 1600s.
Yeah.
And so you would, and usually it was just like the cats jumping on the piano, but you just never know.
Yeah.
And Molly the Wonder Dog is older now. So she's no longer a guard dog.
Mm.
She's kind of like my nap buddy. And so if I get up in the middle of the night to get some water or something, like I'm going to see that woman in black because I just watched this movie. Like, I'll invent ways. And I'm coming off of Brian Perez, our producer's wedding in Catalina Island, which I didn't realize is haunted as hell.
Really?
That entire island is a green door, apparently. There's a theater that's like one of these green doors, without getting too much into that, not a red door, but a green door.
Man, do you want to like a second life as like one of those comedian like ghost hunters? Because you were freaking me out.
Would never trade stand-up for anything. But if I had to turn my stand-up card in for something, I don't know. I get really scared there. And that's why I love these movies. It's that classic attraction. Like Joe, your hat says, watch more horror movies, right?
Yeah. Always.
I've never been able to articulate why I love watching them so much because like they do affect me.
Yeah.
People always think if you love horror movies that you're not scared by them. And it's no, it's the exact opposite. I don't know why I continue to do this to myself, but I still enjoy watching it because I know it is going to keep me up at night.
I mean, I will say this. Overall, obviously, you're a pretty big horror head. Like, rank the sort of, like, within this James Wan, like, where you put the franchises. Because it's really even silly to say the movies at this point because there's too many of them. We'd spend 20 minutes, like, on all of it. But, like, where do you put Insidious as it relates to, like, The Conjuring? I mean, you could even say the Aquaman James Wan universe. Sinister, yeah.
What, Furious 7?
Not that far. Maybe.
Emotional movie.
Maybe. Emotional movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Malignant is for me, top tier one. I'm a Malignant stan. I will die on the hill for Malignant. So I'm Malignant number one. Then I would go maybe, I'd go probably the Saw franchise.
Okay.
Then The Conjuring. And then Insidious. Now, it's important to know. I like Insidious 1 a lot. Big fan of Insidious 1. 2, 3, 4, we'll talk about those later, I'm sure. But, you know.
We covered 4. Like, I covered 4 for us here. I remember that was, like, very early days of me here. And, like, I'll have fond memories of that because I was like, oh, they're sending me to see a movie. And then I saw that one.
Well, isn't it funny that, like, now it's like if a franchise needs to take a break and, like, sit on the bench for a little bit. I feel like Insidious has done its time on the bench. And now with the Red Door, it's, like, ready to come roaring back. And what's interesting about us covering this particular movie, I didn't realize this until this morning, is that The Red Door is the direct sequel to Insidious 2. So I guess, like, Joe, what was your biggest issue with Insidious 2? That, like, because, like, you like 1 a lot.
Yeah.
And then what did 2 lack, or did it just take a different direction than you wanted?
So I think, interesting enough, what you like about it is what I'm not sure if I'm a fan of.
Because I like the further. Yeah, I like investigating more into that. Yeah.
The first one I think is so interesting because it is, you're on the foundation, it's a classic haunted story. This family's haunted, but it does take this weird turn that very few haunted stories take. And that is, oh, your son isn't really possessed. He is possessed, but not really. He's actually lost in the further because he can astral project his body out of his physical body. Like, I don't know, a very little few horror movies in the past have actually taken that route, which I think is very interesting. Insidious 2 kind of takes that a step further and says, well, let's throw some time traveling nonsense into the further. Now, when you're in the astral world and the further, you can visit yourself as a youngin' and kind of figure out some mysteries there. I think it goes a little too convoluted. Mm. And at that point, I kind of lose. I mean, believability is already out the window.
Well, that could have been why I appreciated Insidious Chapter 2 more than you, is because I was feeling convoluted, and I'm a dummy. Everybody, like you know, I never know who the killer is. Like I'm not a smart man. But when I watch Insidious in Chapter 2, I was like getting a little, okay, wait, so we can do what in the further, and we can't do other things? But then when it wrapped it all up with that sort of time travel element and it tied it back, it was a callback in stand-up terms into the opening scene. And it's like, oh, now I see what that kid was doing because he was actually trying to help his older self. I thought that was kind of like a nice, we're putting
also,
a little bow
like
on this story.
The haunting was himself. Like he was literally haunting himself. Yeah. Like that sort of, with the sort of banging. I thought that was cool with it. I think it's more interesting to look at James Wan and Lee Whannell because this is also them coming back together kind of with Patrick Wilson directing this new one with a story by Lee Whannell with a different scriptwriter. Because I do believe on that first one, that was just Lee's screenplay and story and James's direction. And that was the best combination because as James, no offense, I think got more involved in the screenwriting, I think that's where we were married to shots over story development. Like if you really look at this one, the reason why he didn't take as much time to carry through some of these story beats to make the audience stay with it. And it seemed like he gets married to like, oh, I got to get another scene like the jump scare in the kitchen from the first one. We've got to have this one that's just as like important. And a lot of that stuff felt forced. And yes, I do not like the two sidekick dudes. They annoy
Specs
me in
and
this
Tucker.
One.
What?
I don't like them. They annoy me. I feel like they were forced into parts of this movie.
I love Specs and Tucker.
I like them by the time we get to later installments. Like, they grow on me a lot. But, like, this one, I just felt like they were just like, ugh. It was just like, ugh. That scene in Silence of the Lambs with her and the two dudes, like, just played out for way longer than it needed to be.
I'll tell you why I like Specs and Tucker. And that's Lee Winnell and Angus Sampson. Yep. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, like, again, I'm not, like, hating on Lee's performance. I just don't like what the characters are doing.
It's a little goofy. Yeah.
I love that they are comedic relief that still serves a purpose, because they're necessary in the movie, because they are these paranormal sort of investigative types. But I think I love the sort of roller coaster ride that this movie takes you on emotionally, because you do have those levity spurts where they're cracking a joke. And I think it makes the next scare pay off a little more because they sort of keep you off balance. They keep you, their humor keeps you relaxed in a way where you're laughing and you feel safe. But then in the back of your mind, you know, there's something scary coming around that door. The big disappointment with me is that we sort of meet the big bad or what we, even though there's a twist with this woman actually being like this creepy dude, I still miss the Darth Maul from the first one. Yeah. And I'm kind of waiting for that demon to show up. Like, where's Maul? You know, where's the guy? And you never get that. And so that's why I think I was left out in the cold. But I think Tucker and Specs really came to play even more in this one than they did in the first one.
I think they should have been peppered in less. That's what I mean. Like, just a little bit less. Like, I felt they over-egged their pudding for the reason that you're talking about. I think it's a cheap way to undo the tension, to take the audience off guard. And they played the card too many times.
Joe, break this tie.
You know, I sit here kind of like nodding to both you guys. I'm like, oh, who am I going to agree with here? I like Specs and Tucker. Do I think they're in it a little too much, a little too goofy for this movie? Yeah, I think so.
Man.
There's a scene where they have to do this, what's they call it, bear ninja hunter.
Yeah.
It's like a rock, paper, scissors joke.
I love that.
And it's like, let's just get into the scariness. Let's just build that tension. But they have to play this game. And even at the very end, when like the big climactic moment happens, you get, I think like Tucker jumps out randomly to like, oh, I'm going to fight you guys. Yeah. But it's all over. A little too much.
And the writer, I mean, he wrote it for himself. There's also a little bit of self-serving here. You know what I mean? Like, this is Lee literally making himself have more parts in his own movie. Like, come on.
You think
he
Billy Crystal did a little bit?
I mean,
I love Billy Crystal. But
seriously.
I remember my aunt complaining about Billy Crystal movies. Like, look, I like Billy Crystal. He's great. But it seems like he gives himself all the best lines. And I remember thinking, like, in my, like you know, little, comedian zygote brain, I remember thinking, well, that's what I would do if I wrote a movie. I would just give myself all the funny
stuff. This is a connection here, is because you're a comedian. You like
what
them.
What did she bitch about? Forget Paris? What did he write?
I honestly think it was Forget Paris.
Oh, my God.
I think that
God.
It was either that or like City Slickers 1 or 2. But
I think,
you know,
City Slickers 2 hero.
Again, he's great. I love Billy Crystal, and I love Tucker and Specs. But also that jumps, that the relief of the scare at the end. Right. Yeah. Where I'm still not sure if we should trust Patrick Wilson, because Patrick Wilson is a guy and he's a great lead for this movie, because he is a guy who can go insane. He can go the Shining Jack Torrance level. Mm-hmm. But unlike what happens with that character and his wife, played by Shelley Duvall, this one, he snaps out of it. And he's back to his normal self. And within seconds, the kids are like, oh, we love you, Dad. And it takes Rose Byrne a little bit longer. It takes Renee a minute, and then she gets back in there. And I still am not trusting what's happening. But then Angus Sampson breaks through with the joke. And I'm like, okay, now we can feel peace for the moment, for this scene. But anytime there's a laugh near the end of a horror movie, especially nowadays, I know there's one more page we got to read. And that's what I did appreciate about the ending of Insidious, because that first one was such a great cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And Insidious 2, the cliffhanger scene, nowhere near as powerful as that first Insidious. But now we do find that it does set some stuff up for the Red Door. And so I think more in retrospect, I might be more forgiving to this movie because I know it was playing the long game.
I mean, was it, or did they have to go back and rewrite it? Because I'm like, I like to think they thought this all the way through. I'd like to think that.
Me
but
too. I'm not saying they did.
There's some batons they dropped along the way, along the series, that like lead me to think that. Whether or not, the other reason why I feel good about it is, for as much as Patrick Wilson is just like a great actor in this and he is doing such good work, there's some just absolutely cringy acting moments in this movie. Like, just Sequoia level wooden, and the kid is not far from it. Like, I'm sorry, the kid.
Ty Simpkins, my boy.
At that age, he was not
from Jurassic World.
I know he gets better. He does get better. He's not great in the beginning of this. He's doing a little bit much. It's a bit cheesy.
Well, if you're talking about acting presences, the one that I missed in this one, Joe, that she shows up eventually, but I feel like Lin Shaye as Elise, I really missed.
Yeah.
Her fingerprints, no pun intended, all over this movie, as opposed to her just being a corpse in the first scene and then showing up in the further. I think way too late in the movie. That might be my biggest bone to pick with this movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is that, like, she is just so good at building this world in the first one. And we had this feeling as an audience, right from the start of the film, that we're going to get to meet her again, that her dead on the chair is not the end of her character's journey. And it just took way too long to get there for me.
Yeah. And also, like, the fact that they said they had to call her back, I thought that was so cute. Like, oh, no, I'm in the happy place, sweetie. I'm not here with all of
your craziness.
I ain't
going back to you, nerds. Yeah.
It almost feels like they noticed that as well, because she becomes a bigger presence in the third one and the fourth.
And the fourth. I mean, the fourth, it's her movie.
Yeah,
it's just
so, like,
her movie.
It's almost like they realized, oh, she is kind of like the anchor to these horror movies Insidious stories. And so they do make her more of a focus in the third one and the fourth one. So, yeah, it kind of sucks we don't get to see a lot of her in this one. And when we do, she's in the further kind of leading the way. But that's like halfway through the movie.
You know what really impressed me, though, is the younger version of Elise.
Oh.
And I forget the actress's name.
The flashback.
Oh, yes.
She is tremendous. And I think it was Lin Shaye doing the voice. I can't confirm that, but it sounded so much like Lin Shaye. Either that woman has a dead-on Lin Shaye impression, or it was Lin doing the voiceover, and it matches so well. And that I really believe that was the younger version of that character. So I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then as far as, like, younger versions of people showing up, the very end, we get a very young Jenna Ortega sort of, like, being knighted into the world of horror movies, and now she's a huge success, thanks in part to the Scream franchise.
And she was good in it, so I'm not against child actor. Look, Ty got so much better, especially by the time the series got on, but this was acting. He was the kid that got kidnapped and basically laid there in the first movie. He didn't have as much going on. He was the thing they were trying to get back. This one, I think it was a bit of a stretch.
Well, I'm sorry not everyone is your nephew, Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, my God, stop. Hey, listen, that 38% didn't come from just the plot, okay?
I mean, at least Ty Simpkins gets some screen time. They have another brother.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Foster is another. They forget about that brother
That's
all the time.
So true.
Who has less to do in this movie,
Lin
Shaye or the other brother?
The other brother. The first brother, and this one. He's like, he appears for a couple seconds. He talks on, like, the can radio, and then he's gone.
You want a cool gag, though? And I love the can radio in this movie.
Yeah.
I love where they're brothers, and they sleep across the room from each other, and they, like, play games, and, like, they have forts and stuff. And they have that can radio kind of talking mechanism. And then he picks it up, and it's not Foster. And it starts leading into the closet. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And it seems like they're bringing that back in the new movie. Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see, too, because the third Insidious was actually the one where I think they started to like it. That was the one where it got into the 50 range. So even though it wasn't really well received comparatively to this one, they sort of, like, got it back. But I don't want to leave this, though. Remember, this was the found footage era. I specifically love that was something that they did give them something to do in this one, this idea of, like, looking at found footage as a way to sort of, like, stitch up the story. I did think that was kind of cool.
And the way that they switch up the shots, I thought it was interesting the way Juan directed this movie where, you know, you may not love the characters of Tucker and Specs, but the fact that when we're following them, it is found footage-y, and you're actually sometimes looking in, you're Blair Witching the movie. And I thought that really worked as sort of a switch up for the more stationary shots that you get of the family and Rose Byrne walking around the house and just losing her mind. Like, if I'm Rose Byrne in this movie, I'm out. I'm out. One of my kids isn't. Maybe I'll take Foster.
He seems fine.
I'm done with this family. After hearing how far back this lore goes, get me the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Patrick, you get the haunted kid, and I'll take the kid who has nothing to do but sleep.
Does have more to do in sleep by the time we get to the other one. I will say this as sort of like to sum it up. Was there one moment that you found to be the scariest for this one altogether? Or was there anything that you're sort of like, okay, if you're going to do chapter two, because I have mine, that sort of like scene with the guy behind the whatever you call it, the clear glass where the bodies go, that one got me. But what about you?
Well, it's interesting because I think someone said earlier that they thought this one was less scary than the first one. I thought it was maybe more scary, but with just more jump scares, and naturally I jump more. Maybe the scares aren't as genuine or as powerful. But for Insidious Chapter 2, There were a couple that got me. There was one where Rose Byrne thinks she's going crazy. She's kind of walking around the house. Furniture randomly flies sometimes. And then the camera does this cool trick where it turns and then the woman is there and it slaps Rose Byrne and she like gets like knocked out. So that was pretty scary. But I think the one that a lot of people will say is like the moment is probably there's a bunch of people under sheets. They like lift the sheets up, and then one of them is the lady, and she like reaches at them, trying to choke. I don't know who it is. Is that Patrick Wilson? Is it Patrick Wilson or is it Carl? I don't remember who it is.
It may be Carl, actually.
She's trying to choke somebody. Very scary. I thought that part was very scary.
Also love the loud music from the children's toys.
Yeah.
That would turn on. Sort of like, you know, the proverbial cat making the it was just the cat. This one, it's like the toys turning on and off. I thought just the sound effect of that. It's one of those great. Again, opening weekend scares, and then everybody laughs because we're a bunch of adults that paid to see this movie, and we just got frightened by a kid's toy.
Yeah, and I will say, I don't know if the piano would have been as scary in the theater, but it definitely freaked me out last night having a literal grand piano in my house, and it was just like
fun watching them at home for that reason.
That adds to the general scares. I want to just make sure we ask this one. As far as what we're excited for The Red Door, knowing it's a sequel to this, where do you think they're maybe going to go with it, Joe, or where do you hope they go with it?
I hope they bring back the red faced demon. And it feels like that's the direction they're going. It's just so strange to me to introduce such a scary character in the very first film and kind of a big pop culture hit. I mean, people recognize that person as either the Darth Maul villain from Insidious, but people know that person. They know the jump scare, the very iconic jump scare in the kitchen with him appearing behind Patrick Wilson. Everybody knows that. So I hope The Red Door brings him back. I want to get more of him. I was sad we didn't see him in Chapter 2. Bring back him. Bring back the music, that weird Tiptoe Through the Tulip song that was played a lot during the first movie. I want to hear that again. It's a very creepy, like, happy song. I want to see that in The Red Door.
I have somehow avoided any promotional material for The Red Door. So, because, I know, Joe, you're not a huge trailer enthusiast, especially, like, Trailer 2 and 3 and 4. It's like, I've seen enough. You already got my money. Okay. I'm going to go see the movie. I haven't seen a trailer for this. So, I don't know if they hint at Darth Maul coming back, but if you give me that guy again, at last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Perfect.
The perfect, yeah.
What if he has a double-sided accent?
I know. I just remembered something, too. I actually, and this is like kind of name-dropping, but not really, just because I'm a moderator. I announced this project at Blumfest. Blumfest 2000. It was during the pandemic, so it had to be like 2020 maybe. Blumfest 2020 was then when this was announced, and I announced it with like Patrick and them coming back.
Really?
Thanks, Jason, for the gig. It was fun. Yeah.
Wow. As nice of a little career bump as that might have been for you, I think it only furthers your fear of your own grand piano. Yeah. Because you start talking about this stuff, Jacqueline, and it just gets its hooks into you. And I'm sorry, that grand piano, it may be too late already.
It's not that it's like the grand piano would haunt you. It's just like, you know, I listen to a lot of instrumental music. And so whenever you just start thinking about like score, and pianos and things, and then you just start thinking about this movie. It's just, I don't need those two things to meld.
Have you ever heard like the piano like play itself?
No, but it does sometimes settle, and it'll do like a ding.
Ooh.
Yeah, oh yeah, the
so
hammer.
You think it's settling.
Yeah, like it's like if because I.
That's what you think it's doing.
She's rationalizing this.
It definitely is. Yeah. Because it is the hammer settles.
They settle
but
all
I do
the time.
Scales pretty much every other day, and so like yeah.
Do you want me and Joe to come to your place and Tucker inspects it?
No, I think I'm fine. The person that lives in my house, he handles it.
Okay,
fine.
Well, we are playing Hunter Ninja Bear after this.
Hunter Ninja Bear, perfect. I don't know exactly who wins. Like, who beats the ninja? Who beats the hunter?
Well, that's why it's funny. Yeah. Because, like, they're arguing, even though they know there's a clear winner and loser, like rock, paper, scissors, they're arguing
game.
That a bear, how does a bear exactly defeat a ninja every time? Mm. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Why? I don't want to play into this being real. Like, I refuse.
If like, you like them, and comedy is one way to get you to like somebody more.
Fair.
If you like them, now you're invested in those characters, and it's scary when they go down the stairs because now you're rooting for these people.
Listen,
and you love them. You've welcomed them into your heart, and now they could be terrorized by this demon.
Are you just mad because I don't like the comic relief? Does it hit you in a place close to your heart?
You have spent way too many nights with me on the Comedy Store patio.
I think I understand. I apologize. I apologize. Real quick, final thoughts on Patrick Wilson directorial, I think it's debut.
Debut, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love horror movies. I love a good summertime feast. July 7th happens to be my birthday when
Same.
I'm doing my pay-per-view next hour special release, Alive and Well.
Wow.
So I will be alive and well that night hosting that. But probably that Saturday night, I'll probably go check out Insidious, The Red Door.
All right. I will definitely try, but I will be in Mexico that week.
I'll meet you there. I can write that off as a birthday expense.
You should. Yeah. You should. What about you? You're gonna see it.
Oh, of course I'm going to see it. Yeah, and I love Patrick Wilson. Yeah. And I think giving new directors, especially actors nowadays, a chance at horror debuts, mm-hmm. really exciting stuff. I mean, we saw Peele make his debut, change the world with Get Out. I think a lot of directors, especially actor-trained directors, are looking into horror as a way to make their debut. And I'm excited. I love Patrick Wilson. I'm excited for
And
this.
Especially somebody who's like been in this world. It's almost like you've been a backup quarterback for you know, 5 years, and now you're ready for your time to get the starting job.
Yeah.
He's been on these kind of sets working with these directors for so long. It's like, oh, now let's see what you got.
I think the other thing, too, is like, look, Krasinski, Peele.
Yeah.
I think Hader just came out in an interview saying he's got for a horror
movie.
Oh,
give me that. Yeah. Put that right into my veins.
Look, the last season of Barry was a horror movie. I don't care what anybody says. Like, so if that's where he's going, I will be watching, though. That's going to be it for us on the Movie Talk section. We're actually going to rip open our mailbag. So, Brian, cue the music. All right, we have Ketchup Crew member Larry H. Did I miss an episode? How has Constantine from 2005 not been covered? It has been. Okay, if I take two full episode juice, that's what's supposed to be done. Larry,
your girl's got you.
We've got you. We've done Constantine. I feel like I've talked about it too much, but honestly, it is the movie I still think about, and now I've heard that they're maybe going to shelve the Keanu Reeves one, like...
Oh, you mean because they were going to make a sequel and now it's maybe on the back burner?
I don't know if Disbros has that kind of money anymore.
Honey, you know I'm sorry. It's 46% rotten. The audience agrees with you that it's fresh 72%. So, Larry, that was on episode 46 back in July of 2021. We were all so young. Joe, we know your feelings on Paddington 2 and its greatness. Is there a movie that is rotten that you feel was maligned along the same level as Jacqueline feels for Constantine, or I may feel for Young Guns 2?
Yeah. Oh, for Young Guns 2? That's yours?
Fantastic movie.
We've covered that too as well.
There's a lot. I would say. Probably the leader of the bunch was... Let's go with Tron Legacy. My ultimate pick for the movie that has a rotten-ish score. I think it's not like, it's like teetering rotten fresh.
Garrett Hudlin.
Joseph Kaczynski, billionaire filmmaker who made $1 billion off Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
A old and young Jeff Bridges.
Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, no, it was a fun ride. I love when he walks into the arcade and Journey starts cranking, like, you got my money already.
Mm.
It's weird that he goes into this new world, and I've complained about it before, and he starts playing the sport for the first time, and he's immediately LeBron James.
Well,
I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be instantly
And we saw
good.
Him on a motorcycle earlier, jumping off freeway and
that's
doing
fair.
Cool
okay.
stuff.
Okay.
Clearly he's athletic. Yeah. Plus that Daft Punk soundtrack is...
I was
going to
say,
perfect.
I can get behind you on the soundtrack. That movie, no.
I encourage revisiting it.
The brightness of that movie really messes with my eyesight.
I wonder if we'll get a new Tron or a new Constantine. Or a new Young Guns first.
Honestly, I would bet on Young Guns.
They're working on it.
I think the Tron is already in the pipeline.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, Jared Leto is the star.
I think Joe's got the inside track.
If you know about it, you would know about it. Before you get out of here, please let folks know where they can find you.
Yeah.
And if you could give us a TV or movie recommendation, sir.
Okay, you can find me on the TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter as Cinema Joe. I do a lot of reviews, lists, rankings, rants on there as well. My podcast, House of Cinema, we talk about movies every week as well. And the last one, a movie recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to recommend Across Spider-Verse. It feels like everybody has saw that movie already. So,
Dude, that movie's so good, though.
It's a very good movie.
God, it's good.
But,
did you see it on Monday?
Oh, yeah. No, I saw it over the weekend.
Nice.
It's so goddamn good.
Very good movie. I mean, if you haven't seen it already, go watch it. That's a big, obvious recommendation. But if you have seen it, and you want to watch something new, go watch Past Lives, which came out this past week as well.
Oh, okay.
That movie was a game changer for me.
Done and done. On the docket.
That's a big awards play. I do know that.
Yeah.
What up, A24? That is going to be it for us this week. If you want to be like Larry... You know, you did miss an episode, Larry, but it's okay. You can send anything you want.
Jacqueline's not going to forgive you.
Larry. It's okay. It hurts. We could cover it again, but we don't need to. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong at RottenTomatoes.com. Please let us know what you think we should be covering. And wherever you're listening to this, please rate, review, and subscribe. And we will see you guys next because Mr. Tom Cruise is back. He's running. He's coming into theaters. So we're talking what, sir?
Oh, my God. His hair is so good in Mission Impossible 2.
Yes. Just the,
I've wanted many different hairstyles in my life. Haven't been able to pull most of them off. But when he's climbing the rock at the beginning of Mission Impossible 2, that is just sex appeal.
That is sex appeal.
Yeah, I am in. John Woo doing it. Mission Impossible 2, baby. Let's do Gray Scott this thing.
All I think about is Ben Stiller hosting the TV Movie Awards, impersonating him now. Like they do that thing, and I'm like, that is a thing. It is, like, such a thing. Anyway, but we will be back for that one next week. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of that. It's so bad. Anyway, Mission Impossible 2 next week. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. For Brian Remsen, Mr. Mark Ellis, and myself, we'll see y'all next week on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Bye, y'all.